Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day, back in 1958, that the singing duo Tom and Jerry released their tune called Our Song. The duo would later use their real names, which were what? Was it A, the Smothers Brothers, B, Simon and Garfunkel, C, the Everly Brothers, D, Tom Jones and Jerry Seinfeld, or E, Sylvester and Tweety? Tom and Jerry, who were they, really? And question number two. It was on this very day, back in the early 20th century, that the first well-known performance to make a record recorded 10 songs for the Gramophone Company. So who was this famous singer, anyway? Was it A, Roy Rogers? Was it B, Al Jolson? Was it C, Enrico Caruso? Or was it D, Perry Como? Hint, here's a snippet from a recording by this artist in 1916. So who was the first recording star, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March 17th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1844. The composer Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov was born. He was known for such compositions as Scheherazade and Flight of the Bumblebee. Rimsky-Korsakov, born this day back in 1844. And it was 67 years ago today, 1956, Carl Perkins appeared on ABC TV's Ozark Jubilee and performed Blue Suede Shoes. It was his first television appearance. Elvis Presley performed that song the same night on CBS's TV stage show. By the way, Perkins said he was playing at a high school sorority dance when he came across a guy who wasn't paying much attention to his date, but kept telling everyone not to stop on his suedes, meaning his blue suede shoes. At 3 a.m. that night, Perkins woke up and wrote the lyrics based on what happened that night. He couldn't find any paper, so he wrote it on a potato sack. Blue suede shoes.
You're not welcome anymore.
Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive introduces our R&B and disco music news. It's entitled Gloria Gaynor, I Have Not Only Survived, I Have Thrived. She sang the smash that inspired countless comebacks. As her enduring hit, I Will Survive, turns 45, the disco legend, 79, celebrates her triumphs while looking forward to the future. This article is written by Rachel DeSantis, published in People magazine, March 20th, 2023. There are come to Jesus moments, and then there are well moments when Jesus comes to you. Disco queen Gloria Gaynor says divine intervention saved her at a party she attended in the early 80s with her then husband in a Los Angeles hotel suite. Worried he might cheat on her if she went to bed, she was tempted to get an energy boost from cocaine. I was going to try it, Gaynor recalled, and the Holy Spirit literally grabbed me by my collar, lifted my chin, and said, "That's enough. You don't need to do this." That moment set her on a path towards healing, much as her enduring life after love disco anthem, I Will Survive, has done for millions it has touched in the 45 years since it became a classic. I have not only survived, I have thrived, says Gaynor, 79, who found renewed confidence and success following her 2005 divorce from former manager Linwood Simon after 26 years of marriage. I really think a lot of it has to do with the fact that whenever I'm going through something, I have used that song. Both survival and joy have been cornerstones of Gaynor's career. From her glittering 1974 take on the Jackson Fives, Never Can Say Goodbye, to the empowering I Will Survive, her disco hits have been encouraging shy wallflowers to cut loose on the dance floor for decades. I Will Survive, in particular, continues to inspire new generations of superstars. Harry Styles brought Lizzo on stage to sing it during his headlining Coachella set last April, and Miley Cyrus interpolated it into Flowers, her current chart topper. People still are being hurt. People still are needing to be uplifted and encouraged and supported, and I love that, says Gaynor. When I Will Survive was released in 1978 as the B-side to the single Substitute, Gaynor had already faced a series of life-changing setbacks. Though she had a happy, music-filled childhood in Newark with her wise and wonderful mother, Queenie, and six siblings, she was deeply affected by three instances of sexual abuse that began at age five. That, along with her father's absence, weighed on her as she got older and started dating. I wasn't as confident as I could have and should have been with boyfriends, she says. When you're sexually abused like that, you have very, very low self-esteem. When Gaynor wed Simon in 1979, she wanted to prove to her mother and to herself that she had finally found security. I had a terrible fear of being left alone, she says, but their happiness was short-lived. While her marriage to Simon had wonderful moments, Gaynor says the union never felt like an equal partnership. She wanted children while Simon did not, and she says, I just swallowed whatever he said and did whatever he said and just let him have his way. Following her religious awakening in the 80s, Gaynor, who faced further heartbreak when her sister Irma Proctor died in 1995 after being attacked while attempting to intervene in a street fight, found strength in her faith. In 2004, she finally filed for divorce after a particularly telling incident in which she says Simon refused to take her to the hospital while she was suffering from an excruciating migraine. I said, okay, I'm done. You really, truly don't care about me, and I'm done. I'd have to be freaking comatose not to get that, Gaynor remembers. My friend mailed it when she said it was disregard. You don't know how painful that can be until you experience it. Leaving him was extremely liberating. Freed from Simon's grip, Gaynor, who underwent high-risk surgeries in 2018 to ease chronic back pain stemming from a 1978 onstage fall, fulfilled the lifelong goal of recording a gospel album in 2019. And the self-funded testimony earned the star her second Grammy in 2020. What made it so sweet was that I had been wanting to do this for many, many years, but my ex kept putting it off, she says. He didn't see any financial benefit to that. Though she never had another hit as big as I Will Survive, Gaynor has kept busy in the decades since. She's released more than 20 albums, and she made her latest acting appearance last fall in the movie The Thursday Night Club. There's also an upcoming album, which she's writing and recording in Nashville with collaborators who have worked with Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, and Maroon 5. And she'll release a new fragrance in her documentary, Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive, later this year. Meanwhile, she hopes to put to use the bachelor's degree in psychology she earned at age 68, a difficult but fun achievement, she says, by counseling young fathers. Because I grew up without a father, I want to open a place to help them understand how important they are to their children, she explains. As she approaches her 80th birthday in September, Gaynor's plate is full and her life is sweet. I'm very happy, she says. I'm very content where I am. If God called me right now, I'd say, I'm very happy, she repeats. I'm very content where I am. If God called me right now, I'd say, okay, here I come. But if he's got more for me to do here, I'm willing to stay here and do it. I just want to live until I die. Gloria Gaynor.
I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say couldn't mean the world's disaster. Could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love in need of love today.
Stevie Wonder's Love's in Need of Love Today introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Who's the Muse? If you've ever wondered who was the inspiration behind these beloved popular songs, one author got the scoop. This is written by Mark Myers, published in February-March issue 2023 of AARP magazine. You've heard these hit songs countless times. On one of those listenings, you might have wondered, who's that song really about? In the two volumes of my Anatomy of a Song books, I interviewed singers and songwriters and got the real stories behind 100 popular tunes. Turns out they are populated with lovers, rivals, drifters, and other colorful characters. This one, for example, Love's in Need of Love Today by Stevie Wonder from 1976. Wonder says, I wrote the song's basic ideas in the late 1974 in my hotel room in New York, when Yolanda Simmons was pregnant with our daughter, Aisha. The concept I had in mind was that for love to be effective, it has to be fed. Love by itself is hollow. I didn't have all the words for the song at first, only the title phrase. To this day, I never sit down and formally write songs. They emerge from the process of listening to what I'm doing on the keyboard. I get my inspiration from experiences that can be painful or beautiful. Life is endless, so there will forever be songs about things that happen in life. But hearing the song back in the studio hurt because it was so emotional. When I performed it in New York recently, I broke down. I've seen people come and go, and live and die, cry and laugh. It all came rushing back.
Don't delay. Send your sin right away.
And what about the backstory to the Young Rascals song, Groovin', from 1967? Remember this one? Felix Cavalier, singer and co-writer, says, "Back in 1966, I was hopelessly in love with a girl I was dating named Adrian. I had met her at a friend's house in Pelham Manor, New York, where I'm from, and she became my muse. Adrian was my first serious girlfriend, and our relationship lasted about a year. Many of my best songs were written about her, or because of her, including Lonely Too Long, Girl Like You, and How Can I Be Sure? Like most musicians, I worked Friday and Saturday nights, which meant Adrian and I only had Sundays together. Groovin' expressed the bliss I felt relaxing with her, watching the world go by on Sunday. Adrian knew grooving was about her and us. When I played the song, she smiled and said, 'Wow, that's lovely.' Adrian was an angel who came into my life and left.
We'll keep on spending sunny days this way. We're gonna talk and laugh our time away. I feel it coming closer day by day. Life will be ecstasy, you and me endlessly.
And what was Todd Rundgren thinking when he wrote this one? Hello, It's Me, from his 1973 recording. Rundgren says, "My senior year in high school, I had a crush on a girl named Linda. One day, a friend dropped us off at Linda's house. Her father hated me on sight. He turned the garden hose on me. Long hair on a guy was a red flag to parents. A day or two later, Linda told me she was forbidden to see me. That Christmas, I wanted to make a gesture to win her back. I saved up and bought her a pantsuit. When I went to her house, the only person there was her sister, who invited me in. When I left, I realized I had to stop this. Writing my song, I decided to make the lyrics about our breakup. But instead of being the victim, I turned the song's story around, so I was breaking up with her. This gave me a little power and allowed me to imagine how I might have done things differently over the phone. Last but not least, what's the story behind Sheryl Crow's 1996 hit, If It Makes You Happy? Jeff Trott, the guitarist and co-writer, says, "I started writing If It Makes You Happy right after my girlfriend Quinn broke up with me in 1994. Starting the song was part of the grieving process. I opened a crappy $1 bottle of sherry and set up my little Baldwin acrosonic piano. I thought about what I could have done to keep her in L.A. I turned on my little cassette player recorder and started ranting. Sheryl Crow adds, "When Jeff played me what he had for If It Makes You Happy, I heard it as a message to quit complaining. By that point, my first album had sold 6 million copies, so how could everything be so bad?" And Trott concludes, "After the Sheryl Crow tour, I reached out to Quinn and asked if she'd heard If It Makes You Happy. I told her that she was the inspiration." The line went quiet. Then she said, "Oh, wow." Today, Quinn and I live in Nashville, Tennessee. We married in 2005 and have 2 children. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this very day in the early 20th century that the first well-known performer to make a record recorded 10 songs for the Gramophone Company. Who was this famous singer anyway? Was it A, Roy Rogers, B, Al Jolson, C, Enrico Caruso, or D, Perry Como? And I played a snippet of an early 20th century recording by this singer as a big hint. Correct answer. Answer C, Enrico Caruso. Caruso recorded 10 arias. Performer to make a record. He was the first well-known one, and he did this back in 1902. As noted in EncyclopediaBritannica.com, Caruso was born and died in Naples, Italy. He was born into a poor family in 1873. Although he was a musical child who sang Neapolitan folk songs everywhere and joined his parish choir at the age of 9, he received no formal music training until age 18. Within 3 years, in 1894, he made his operatic debut in Naples at the Teatro Nuovo. He was a sensation and soon had engagements in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and Buenos Aires. World recognition came in the spring of 1902 after he sang in La Bohème at Monte Carlo and in Rigoletto at London's Covent Garden. He made his American debut in Rigoletto at the opening night of the Metropolitan Opera in New York City on November 23, 1903, and he continued to open each season there for the next 17 years, presenting 36 roles in all. His last public appearance, his 607th performance with the Metropolitan Opera, was December 24, 1920. He died the following year in Naples. During his lifetime, Caruso had become the most celebrated and highest paid of his contemporaries worldwide. He made recordings of about 200 operatic excerpts and songs. Many of them are still being published. His voice was sensuous, lyrical, and vigorous in dramatic outbursts and became progressively darker in timbre in his later years. Its appealing tenor qualities were unusually rich in lower registers and abounded in warmth, vitality, and smoothness. And the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1958 that the singing duo Tom and Jerry released their tune called Our Song. The duo would later use their real names, which were what? A, the Smothers Brothers, B, Simon and Garfunkel, C, the Everly Brothers, D, Tom Jones and Jerry Seinfeld, or E, Sylvester and Tweety. Correct answer? Answer B, Simon and Garfunkel. Our Song was recorded the year after their very first recording in 1956. From the early rock and roll genre, here's Tom and Jerry's Hey Schoolgirl, introduced by Paul at a recent concert.
Then there's another album we were thinking of doing, Our Greatest Hits, and if we did, we thought we'd call it Hey Schoolgirl in the second row, and 12 others. But we like to sing our first hit of 1956.
Whoop-a, bapaloochie ba. Your mind is a woo bapaloochie ba. Your mind, hey, schoolgirl in the second row.
As noted in songfacts.com, Tom and Jerry was the name Simon and Garfunkel used when their childhood friends and classmates first performed together at high school juniors. During the late 1950s, they released several singles under the name Tom and Jerry, Hey Schoolgirl being the first of them, which reached number 49 on the Billboard singles chart in 1957. By the way, Paul's dad, a college professor, played bass on that recording. Simon and Garfunkel made just five studio albums before breaking up in 1970, after which they each continued composing and recording as solo artists. Simon and Garfunkel were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1990. So let's close out with a more recent recording by the duo, formerly known as Tom and Jerry. Given the transitional breezy weather of March, here's the whimsical Cloudy by Simon and Garfunkel from their third studio album, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme.
Cloudy, my thoughts are scattered and they're cloudy. They have no borders, no boundaries. They echo and they swell from Tolstoy to Tinkerbell, down from Berkeley to Carmel. Got some pictures in my pocket and a lot of time to kill. Hey sunshine, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.